Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, and welcome to the 289th episode of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I'm Kyle Barton of K-Barton Tools, and I'm here with my co-host, Diami Plotke of the Penultimate Woodshop, and Sean Wisniewski of the Corner Workshop. And tonight, we're talking with a longtime friend of the show, the one and only Ben Strano of Fine Woodworking. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you back.
Always.
That's right. So I guess we'll start out this show like most podcasts these days and talk about the coronavirus, COVID-19. And so we've had a couple of things come up since our last show. I think we did mention on our last show that Fine Woodworking Live was canceled. But y'all have, Ben, if you want to fill us in a little bit about what's going on? I don't think you're not going to have it this year and just revamp it for next year. I think it's April 16th and 18th of 2021.
Okay, you're better at that than me. I can never remember exactly when it is. It's in April. So we had talked about kicking it down the road, trying to find another date. And it just seemed, it was, who knows, you know? And, also, you know, we've done a lot of research and surveys and everything. And it seems like that time is a sweet spot for our audience. That's when our audience really likes to have an event, because they're less likely to be away on vacation. They're less likely to be, you know, doing this and that. So it's always felt like the right time for us. So for maybe a day or two, we were looking into other dates, and then it was just, you know, let's just punt on this year and hope everything's cooled down for the next year and we can do it right. And hope, I don't know if Tom was here, he would tell you if we're going to be doing the same presenters or what the program is going to be like. But I think that that's the current goal, is to just, you know,
right,
flop it, change the date of the calendar, and that's
okay.
The way
things are running right now, who's to say that a new date would even work? I mean, it's such a moving target right now.
Yeah.
We're in a very different place now than we were last week. So you don't want to just say, let's move it ahead 6 weeks and we'll be okay. You might not be.
Exactly. Right.
And
exactly.
All parties involved are going through it a little differently. So, yeah, really hard to tell if everyone could show up that was planned this year.
Well,
extenuating circumstances.
If you think about the world that we were living in a week, week and a half ago, it felt like we might have been jumping the gun at one point in the day. And then it felt like, you know, oh my God, how have we not canceled it the next, you know? Right. And it was all moving so fast that, and there's a lot of pieces to line up, because we didn't want to come out and say we were canceling and we don't know how the refund process is going to work.
Yeah.
You know, because
I want to congratulate you on that, because y'all put out a thing. Hey, in 2 weeks, you should be getting your refund within 2 weeks. I mean, the next day I got emails saying, oh, the money's being processed and back in your account.
Well, and honestly, I mean, we were expecting to have to eat a lot of it, honestly. Mm-hmm. But it just, Tom and Renee were like, it's the right thing to do. And, right. And then after that decision was made, the registration software that we, or program Eventbrite that we use, they came down and said, listen, if anybody wants to cancel their event, we're just going to make it easy, you know? And so they really went above and beyond, honestly, and made it easy. So I really thought it was going to take a long time for everything to come through. I think Betsy was even saying at one point she was expecting 30 days. And then I heard from multiple people that it was already, you know, it was a day or two and that's it. Good. I mean, if anybody's looking into planning a big event, Eventbrite, they get the big thumbs up from me there, you know?
Exactly. Now, did y'all have insurance for this event, or?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I try and stay away from that.
Yeah, I would too. Well, since the event's not happening, y'all have started doing some other unique things, and I think you've been kicking it off the last few days with some interactive online events.
Yeah. Well, we're still figuring out.
Yeah.
I don't know. The live stream thing just happened really naturally. I was I was in the shop one night and my wife texted me. She goes, "Chris Thiele's doing a live stream from his bathroom or something, from his bedroom or his bathroom or whatever." I was like, "Cool, I'm signing on to that." And it really felt like this, okay, you know, everything's weird right now, but this is cool, you know, and it felt like a little community thing. And then all night I was sitting there, I was going, what can I do? You know, how can I do that? Mm-hmm. And I'm not like I said in one of the live streams, I'm not Mike Pekovich. People aren't going to like just swarm around a computer to see me woodwork. So what can I do? And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I have full access to putting anything I want in front of the paywall. So why don't we find out what people are working on if they're stuck in, you know, by themselves, isolated in their shops, mm-hmm. and let's make it easier for them, you know? And so there's, you know, a lot of requests for machine setup videos and the obvious ones. I think there was some workbench things, but so that day we did a live stream and everybody told me what they're looking for, and I actually like it. Some of it was just my computer screen. I was saying, this is a great article, that's a great article, read this, do this. And then the next day I put it all in front of the paywall on the website so anyone can access it. And
that's great.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And then from that, people are saying, hey, give us a tour of your shop. And I was like, you know, I'll do it some other time. And so we did that today. The other thing that we are working on, though, is it's a drag that there is no event in April. So we're going to try and figure out some kind of virtual event to put on. It's right now it's we're still figuring it out. Again, we had talked about figuring out different ways of doing the podcast. I'm also trying to figure out different virtual event hosting platforms and trying to do a classroom type scenario where maybe Jeff and I head up to Bob Van Dyke's and he does his class. It's a live thing. Mm-hmm. And you can be there in front of your computer and you can ask questions live, and you know, I would chime in and ask the question on your behalf so that Bob's gotcha. Not watching the screen. So we're looking into things like that because we really have a lot of presenters that we could get to in a short drive. So we would like to try and fill that gap somehow. We're not positive how it's totally going to be done yet, but some virtual events will be in the future.
Well, for all those people who have questions about sanding back blue epoxy, I have Cat 6 right into the garage.
All right.
And how much does blue shellac stain things?
Oh, it's alcohol based. It wipes off.
All right. Yeah, try and get some alcohol right now.
Yeah, I know. Denatured alcohol is going for a premium these days.
I was actually at a local hardware store today, and they were making with heavy duty shop towels. They were making like alcohol wipes out of denatured alcohol and rolls of paper towels cut in half.
Oh my god!
And it was like, oh, I guess that'll work. All right.
But, yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Well, man, y'all are doing a fantastic job, especially helping support us through this event, whatever we want to call it. But, you know, keep our minds off of, you know, all the craziness out there. And, yeah, fantastic. So let's move on. So Texas Woodworking Festival has also been, it hasn't been canceled, it's just been rescheduled, but they've rescheduled it for September 26th. So we've been we of course support their efforts. So I think if you bought tickets, they're good for that event. So there's nothing you need to do. Just show up for September 26th. If you did buy tickets and need a refund, they can do that too. But I think one of the things they use this festival for is to help fund their school. So. Okay. I would say if you can't make it and you can part with the money, that would be nice, because I know a lot of teachers and schools out there. I mean, they're going to have no income for the next few months. And it's, you know, we don't want to lose any of them.
Their tickets are very reasonable, too. This is that's
$22. That's well worth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dropping it on the ground. Yeah.
So maybe even if you didn't plan to go to the event, it might be nice to go ahead and buy a ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and I know from my other life of running, I just listened to a whole thing about marathons and how many of those are being postponed in this, and how my local marathon, instead of postponing like the Boston Marathon, which is a very important one, they just said, kind of like Fine Woodworking did, scrap it. The fall is going to be so busy with events because everything's being pushed there, because everything that was already scheduled there is just going to be piled on by what's already. What also is going to be coming in there, because hopefully we can just move this stuff 6 months in the future and be okay. Like, if you can go to support for sure, and also because the attendance may be at a premium depending on what else is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things you know, with all these events. Now, one other event I haven't heard, don't have any information on, that we have also promoted is the Bodger's Ball. So that's not scheduled till late June. So I'm not sure what their status is, but I'm sure they'll post something about that soon.
Yeah, there's enough things right now that are kind of questionably far enough in the future that you're hearing not too much about them. Hoping that, you know, in 3 months this could get a lot better. And in the future, I'm sorry, future person, if you're looking back and going, boy, they really blew that out of proportion. You know,
let's hope so.
We hope so. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Fingers crossed. But like the 2020 Olympics right now, they haven't said anything. You know, early on, they were like, oh, my God, they might cancel it. And now that like Bedlam is in the United States, like they're not saying much more. So hopefully by July, we can all enjoy something like that. But time will tell.
Yes.
Well, and honestly, this is one scenario where I feel like I've yet to find someone who I don't feel like we're in it together right now. You know, everybody seems to be on the same page. Mm-hmm. And if you've got an event going in July or something like that, and you're hesitant about canceling it, I get it. I'm not going to hold that against you. And I'm also might not plan on going, but, you know, but it's people are, I think, going to extend a bit more understanding with the circumstance than many times you would find. But it's a hard thing to pull a plug on an event. It's a hard thing to do it. And if it is far enough out, maybe there's not enough of a reason yet to do it, because everyone's assuming or everyone's understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. Well, one, I guess, good thing that's come out of this so far is Lee Valley is offering free shipping now with no minimum order. So, you know, that's one thing we need to do is support our, you know, support what you can, your local businesses, but as well as some of our woodworking businesses. So now's a good time to go over that wish list at Lee Valley.
I know mine's... Is it just me that in times like this, you kind of start looking at things going, I could buy that. Yeah. You know, I got time on my hands. I could, you know, maybe, you know, but yeah, I mean, that's great that they're reducing shipping, you know, for something like that, something that they do, you know, in different times of the year, but,
well, absolutely. I think here the key is no minimum order. So
yeah. I mean, and usually it's like a $50 order, which isn't hard to do, but still. That means you can get a doorknob. You know, and get free shipping. Yeah. So check out their hardware, you know, catalog. They got plenty of stuff there too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And
I was pretty surprised to see that, because I mean, no minimum order,
right? Like
that is fairly unprecedented by them, I would think. But yeah, it's just one of those things. You know, right now is when you find out, like how who's running a business, and like, especially Lee Valley, it's mm-hmm. Robin is, he cares. That man cares, you yeah, know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to have to buy that little, oh, what do they call it? It's that little plywood thing that they made for, it's a joiner for your.
Oh yeah. For the shoulder plane.
Shoulder planes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I need to buy that. So maybe place an order tomorrow for that. But yeah.
Mine's the bow sander. I think that's the one.
Oh yes, 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 yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, especially with all the work you're doing now with the ukuleles and everything. Yeah, that could be really, really handy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny. You say that. I'm looking this time last year, a little later last year. We had the discussion about their bow sander versus the Rockler one.
We did, didn't and we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I still have the Rockler one. I've still not bought sandpaper for it, and I can see it right now. Because the sandpaper is more expensive than the sander was.
Yeah.
What was I just thinking about? I have something just like that. I couldn't remember, though.
Maybe to spur you on to buy some stuff, Festool is having a price increase on April 1st. And no, that's not an April 1st gag. So if you're interested in any Festool products, now's the time to buy. So it looks like they're doing everything across the board, so even from their consumables.
And so, have they done a portion of that in previous years, or at least alluded to that? They do it almost every
year, don't they? Almost, every couple of years.
Three or four
yeah.
years ago, they stopped putting pricing in their catalog so that they were restricted to it for a full year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so with that, we'll move on to what's in the shop. So, Sean, you been working on anything?
You know,
are you at home? Are you still going in the office at this point?
Oh no, I'm still in the office. Actually, my office is bustling as a little inside my work, but our client site has said any non-essential contractors can go back home, which is mm-hmm. odd because they're very involved in the site. So on Monday of this week, I received 20 employees that aren't normally in my office to work. So our office got busier this week than the opposite. But today I had a discussion that my team of IT people spread between three offices, they're trying to get us to not work in the office full time during this event, which is odd because I'm the only one in my office. So I do very physical, hands-on work with equipment and accounts and other things that I can't really do remotely. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be in the office. But anyway, so what I've found recently is my time is I get like 15 minutes at a time. I can't put an hour into my shop. I get little bits. And because of my hobby of rockets lately, that means I can paint, but only one coat on one thing at a time, essentially, because the masking will take that long to do that. So what I've accomplished in the last few days is got primer on one piece and a coat of yellow, which is the color of the upper body of the one rocket I'm working on, because I've now flown this rocket and proved that it could go up and come down safely. So now it gets a coat of paint. Because okay. you don't want to put that time in or any of the material or anything if it's going to blow up or crash unexpectedly. So, you know, that it's my mentality about it anyway. And I'm trying to think what else. No, that's about it. I've gotten a little bit of painting done in the last like 2 days in a total of about 25 minutes worth of opportunity. Otherwise I got new shoes and I ran on them tonight. So there you go.
There you go. Well, for me, it's been a little interesting today, because I had a call from my doctor's office. I went in early last week for just a routine checkup, and they called me today and told me that one of their staff members tested positive and they recommend I self-quarantine for 14 days. So I was like, fantastic. So, so that's what I'm doing.
For the listeners, that's why we're recording tonight's episode remotely.
Exactly. Now, you know, one of the things I was doing was, you know, fulfilling some orders for some jigs. In fact, I was going to go out to the mail today and ship some. So I had to change those plans. And anybody that's listening that's ordered my jigs and received one of my emails, I do appreciate your support and understanding during this time. And everyone's been really super great and positive. But yeah, it's going to be a couple of weeks before I can venture out to the post office. So anyway, so that's what I'm doing. I am still working on building up some inventory for my jigs, and hopefully we'll get some shave horse time in next week because I got a bunch of spindles I need to shape.
There you go. Not to make too light of it, but yeah. You're a retiree, so you were at home anyway.
That's true. But, you know, I'm a young retiree. You know,
it's true. That is also true.
You know,
and woodworkers don't have a whole lot of friends anyway. So
right,
you were going to be all over the place.
Yeah, I think I mentioned true. The last time we recorded. Like we're isolated anyway. Like even recording this, we're not in the same state, let alone anywhere near each other. And so for this part at least, we're pretty darn safe.
Yes, exactly. Now, what's also interesting is, you know, the one place I needed to go besides the post office was to Granger and pick up some inventory items for my jigs. Luckily, I have plenty on hand, but it's just a replenishment order.
Can you get Granger to deliver?
You can, but then I got to pay the shipping charges. But if I just go to their store and pick it up, I can buy it there. So.
Yeah. Raise your hand real quick. What's closer to you, a Rockler or a Granger?
A Granger by like Granger. A couple hundred miles.
Actually, a Fastenal is closer than even a Granger, but they don't. Well, they have everything now, Granger does, but sometimes they're expensive.
Fastenal, I've got closer than Woodcraft, but I could not tell you that there's a Granger within 300 miles.
I bet there is. There's a Fastenal on the same block as my office, but Granger's only about 15 minutes away.
Has anyone ever bought something out of Fastenal, though?
We buy it. Well, I've never been in the place.
No, not your roofing gig.
They carry lots of cool fasteners.
But when I had to rebuild my joiner planer, I needed some specialized screws that I actually got at Fastenal.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. I'm with
you, Ben.
I've never set foot in one.
I'm trying to. I can't figure out where. I'm on the Granger site right now. I'll find a branch right there at the top. Tech guy. Okay, they're not that far away. I've never been in a Granger. I've never ordered anything from Granger. I've been in a Fastenal. I've never bought anything.
Well, have you ordered stuff from McMaster Car?
I love McMaster Car.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff you order from them, you can get at Granger. And so sometimes a price difference, sometimes Granger may be a little more expensive than McMaster Car, but you don't have to pay the shipping. So, you know, if you go pick it up at their store.
But with McMaster Car, you get to have that, like, there's no web experience like the McMaster Car.
No, there isn't.
The Granger web experience isn't as different as you'd expect.
Yeah.
From McMaster Car?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that different. But they will, if you do ship it, they will tell you what your shipping's going to cost.
I hate that. I hate that, and I love it. It's almost like you know you got me, so you know you can do whatever you want right now.
Right.
And that's cool, because it's going to be here tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is one about 25 minutes south of me. I had no idea.
Granger's everywhere.
Yes. They are. Now I see this, you know, looking through the locations in Ohio. Now, that's not everywhere in Ohio. As I was going down, I was like, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours. Oh, no, look, there's one right there. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. They've got everything.
They do.
Just so that you guys know, I'm useless now. I'm just going to be jumping back and forth between McMaster Car and Granger.
maybe you could build a remote recording rig from stuff you get there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Again, they've got everything.
But
so my situation, what's in your shop?
Yeah, it's the opposite of Sean's in that
no rockets, huh?
No rockets. It is a 100% rocket free. It's how we roll them. That's how we like it. But the, the isolation that is coming with, everyone reacting to COVID-19 means that.
Can I ask you, how's it impacting the roofing business?
At work, it has shut down a number of sites. We work for a lot of hospitals, and we've had three different hospital systems tell everyone, don't come.
Yep.
So we're kind of playing it day by day, and so far we still have places, and we have some private customers who are like, oh, well, the restaurant in my shopping center is closed, so now you're going to have to set up scaffolding right in front of it to get on the roof. Let's do it now. So we've got some situations like that that are coming up, and provided that the government response doesn't become more increased, mm-hmm. and that the actual illnesses don't really magnify. If we can hope that things kind of stabilize as they are, I don't know that it's going to have that much of an impact in terms of our actual production. But it's lots of jumping through hoops right now to figure out where we can go, where we can't go. We're broken up into lots of little groups, so we're not usually, in New York at least, we're being told to stay mm-hmm. below units of 10, and that's not really a problem. So far we're navigating through it, but every day is a little different, so we'll figure that out.
I had that thought today, like for those businesses, sadly, that have to close their doors, but maybe hopefully not for too long. What an opportunity to upgrade or fix whatever that may have been the needling thing that you really couldn't do because you had to be open every day.
The problem is that lots of small businesses rely on a constant flow of revenue. And
that's true.
It's very, very true. Unfortunately, it's going to be devastating to far too many small firms.
Mm-hmm.
My heart goes out to a lot of them. It's rough. And especially the employees service employees are not making killer dollars. And when the restaurant closes for 3 weeks, they're hurting. And hopefully that does not last any longer than it absolutely needs to.
As I was saying earlier, all the woodworking instructors and, of course, I know all the chair makers are canceling their classes. And, that's the way these people make a living. And it's really, really going to be hurting them, too. So, my wife, she's a piano teacher, basically. She's canceled all her classes. So, she's getting no income from that. Luckily, we don't depend on that income. But if we did, it would be devastating.
Mm-hmm. And just this past weekend, I have a coworker that went to it's a woodworking school, but they've also do a lot of other things. And so he actually went through a knife making class. And leading up to this previous weekend, it was a little questionable, but still happening. And I asked him on Monday, I said, hey, did you make a knife? He goes, oh, yeah. And he showed me the picture of the whole thing. He said there were like 14 people in the class, which is a really full class for what it was doing. Mm-hmm. But subsequently, that place has had to shut down. And same thing, like, we can't do this anymore. It's we need to be careful until we know more going forward.
Right.
That's a very, very, very real thing right now.
Yeah. The way that has impacted our family the most, well, beyond the fact that the kids are home from school, that's a big impact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's also shut down all the scouting we do. So
yeah, I was gonna think of that too, because you guys aren't even meeting anymore, right?
Exactly. So I've gone from two meetings a week and most weekends having something going on to nothing. This recording is the only evening event I have all week, which is just unheard of. So
yes, that is.
What that means in terms of my shop is the entertainment center slab that is currently serving as a recording desk and just catch all for all the crap that's in my shop right now. The plan, and I don't want to be held to this, but the plan is that Saturday morning I'm going to come in and clean the shop out, which hopefully won't take all day. And then I'm going to drag this thing out in the driveway and continue to sand it. Because I would love to start throwing more epoxy on it at this point and just keep this stupid thing moving, because it's been far too long since I've touched it. So that's the plan, is to get back into sanding it. And while I've got everyone there, 18-month-old Total Boat Epoxy, still good?
Yeah. Ooh. I would think so.
You mean in the bottles?
I got the two pump things, the gallon and the quarter, whatever they are.
I got some big bottles of West System that I've had for at least a decade.
Okay.
Oh, I'm close to that with some West 105. I've used that on rockets recently, and they appear to be hardening and as tough as could be.
Yeah, you might want to just make up a real tiny batch and just make sure it hardens. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Is Friday night, I'll probably make up a batch, and when I come out to clean Sunday, I'll make Saturday morning, I'll make sure it's all set.
Do you just say I've used it on rockets? Because you know people can't argue with anything after that. I've used it on rockets.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. No, so it opened me up into the silica, the colloidal silica, which I know it's a filler. It's a I don't know what else it does. It's a thickener. It's essentially cornstarch. If you were baking, like it just makes it thicker, and that's good because there's applications when you're making a rocket. And Ben, if you haven't heard, I made a rocket. I put together a rocket that's like 6 feet tall and 4 feet in diameter. Or sorry, four inches.
It's a very stubby thing.
4-inch tube, 6 feet high. And so it's basically like the kits that you did from the hobby store, but times like 10. And so when you're adhering those wings, you need some substantial fillets to strengthen them. And if you use traditional epoxy, it runs like hell. And so you need to thicken it, but you don't want to thicken it and lose strength. And anyway, so I got into that whole thing. But yeah, so I use like maybe not 10, maybe 8-year-old West epoxy that I had from making a, God knows, I'm fixing something, you know, previously. And it's worked great. But yeah, maybe that does quiet some argument to just say, I use it on a rocket.
Well,
because
I'm not dead.
Sean is a flat earther. If he
as previously stated, this thing went up in the air, came down actually pretty damn hard, and didn't break. And it partly because of probably the materials I use, which is good. But also in the mixture of building a thing, I use JB Weld too. So you know, who knows.
Yeah, who knows? Ben, we're trying to expand our audience with both woodworking and model rocketry. So
we think the crossover in that Venn diagram that's our sweet spot.
Epoxy.
I've used everything from a belt sander to a hand plane to a spoke shave on that rocket, I promise you.
Can you bring the rocket over and let it play with my bandsaw?
I mean, maybe.
But let me actually bring the thickened epoxy back to woodworking. Is that I've been using fiberglass to thicken the epoxy because it makes it even thicker than the colloidal.
That'll be crazy.
Other stuff. I'm looking to fill these pores, and I'm looking the colloidal. What is the colloidal? What?
It's colloidal silica.
Silica. Thank you. The silica makes it thick enough that it doesn't bleed through the timber strand, which is what happens if you don't thicken it at all, and it just drips right through. That's one of the reasons I was thickening, but I was also thickening just to be able to build up to build up a thicker coat so that I wouldn't have so much shrinkage. But that's why I'm sanding this whole thing back, because it did shrink
a
little bit.
Is that a pulverized fiberglass that you're putting into it?
I've never heard of a fiberglass filler.
Yeah, it's a glass filler. I don't think they actually call it fiberglass filler.
It's not fibers glass anymore. It's just glass.
It's a powder.
Yeah.
Huh.
So is that like they're like little bubbles, right?
They're sharp.
That's the glass.
Sharp. Oh, they're sharp.
They're not sharp. You're not going to cut yourself, but it's not a smooth thing to run your fingers through. Like it's got some texture to
it. And the silica, if you breathe out in its vicinity, it's going everywhere.
So is the glass. You have to.
Okay.
You don't open it without your respirator on. It's just, it puffs everywhere. It's a bloody mess.
I'd be interested to compare the two.
Well, come to New York. I have a giant tub of both.
I've got a small tub of silica.
The glass only came. It's like a 2-gallon bucket. It's this big freaking
thing. Oh my God.
It's only a gallon, but it seems huge. It's this big plastic tub.
Is that a boat building thing? Is that what they strengthen it for, like hulls or stuff?
Yeah, they use some. It's all from Total Boat. So somehow they use it somewhere in boats.
Okay.
Well, with that, Ben, what are you working on that we didn't hear about earlier today?
What's in your shop that we can reinforce with thickened epoxy? That's really the question.
I know.
Because Diami and I both have experience.
I'm way out of my element here. let's see. I'm in one of those like sad, depressing times when you need to buy a lot of materials. And you either like don't want to spend the money or you shouldn't spend the money. Mm-hmm. And so like right now I'm just kind of treading water because with the ukuleles I've been building, it's the tone wood's not cheap. Mm-hmm. And there's only a few places you can get it from. And the best place I found is this place, Bow River, I think, it's in Canada. And when you start doing the calculations, you're like, oh man, I can get all of this for nothing. And then the shipping comes in. Mm-hmm. And the shipping is absurd enough where I just can't bring myself to do it, where Anissa was going up to shoot something with Vic Teslin. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh wait, if I have something shipped to Vic's, can you drive it back for me? And we just didn't have enough time.
Can you get it through customs? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, Anissa could, I couldn't.
All right.
But so it's just one of those periods. So right now I'm making, bending molds, basically the outer molds for two ukuleles. I'm tweaking the shape a little bit, so I have to make all new molds.
That's going
to
be my question.
And you already made
the mold lasts more than one. Yes, it's just because you're changing it.
Yeah, yeah. There was a mistake that I didn't make in the first one. It was right there to make, but I didn't make it, and I found it on the second one, where my mold didn't have enough of a flat spot to easily put the neck on. So mm-hmm. when the neck was in position, I was basically, as I was doing the glue up, I would shim a piece out to make this flat area that the neck would go on. And on ukulele number two, the neck wound up. Or the neck pocket wound up real like 3 degrees off. And
that sounds like a lot.
It's a lot over the course of 18 inches.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cause that neck extends up 3 degrees, 18 inches from the body, and all of a sudden it just doesn't look right. You know, there's something about it, and it's not enough that you can easily say what it is, but it just didn't look right. And eventually I figured it out and recut the neck with a 3 degree angle in it, mm-hmm. to correspond with it. But I don't want to do that anymore. So, you know, let's get it right. So I made new molds. This batch, I want to make two at the same time.
Two molds so that you can make two ukes at the same time.
Exactly. And I think I'm going to make a tenor along with them as well. Whoa. So yeah, so I'm in mold making MDF hell right now.
Well, any reason for ukuleles compared against other instruments? Just curious.
Have you ever tried to make a bass?
No, I don't want to do that to myself. No. So years and years and years ago, we used to always joke in this, I worked in recording studios, and we used to always joke, oh, this needs a baritone ukulele, because it seemed like an absurd idea, right? Mm-hmm. And then one day I saw out a baritone ukulele, and I was like, wait a minute, this is a really cool instrument. It's like a small guitar. And I had always wanted one. So I did a record for a friend of mine for free. So basically I did like 10 grand worth of work for him for nothing. Mm-hmm. And as thank you, he bought me like a $200 ukulele, which if you knew this guy, this is the only $200 thing he's ever bought in his entire life. So, but it's always meant a lot to me. So right. Like one day he was like, hey, let's go to Corner Music. Handed me a baritone ukulele and was like, this is awesome. And it just wound up as I have nothing better to do, I'll sit on a couch and play this ukulele thing. Mm-hmm. And for years, that's always, I come home from work and I immediately grab that thing and I just start playing and people start talking to me and I hear maybe 40% of what they're saying, but, it's just always been a part of my life ever since I had one. It's just, it's a small instrument that, you can sit and not bother people easily with, you know, it's like with a guitar, sometimes there's a guy in the room playing guitar, you know, and it's just, it's a lot.
And you're liking that scenes from, Animal House.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Now, yeah. Sometimes I am like that with a ukulele. Don't get me wrong. I like, sometimes my wife will look at me and be like, okay, that's a lot, you know, but, it's just always been a part of me. And one thing about working in the office where I work is, especially it was like Matt was making the boxes. Matt had his thing. Mike had his thing. John Tatro has his thing. Everybody had a thing where it was like, you could look at a piece and say, this is, I know immediately who made this, you know?
Right.
Everybody had a voice, a woodworking voice. And I had always been seeking one. And I tried to glom onto other people's things. And it just, it was never right. You know, I did the, I still love carving spoons, but I never felt like it was, I never felt like I was saying anything with it. Or I was doing something that felt really original. I was always chasing something. And, man, this is a really long story. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. So, I had a friend of mine pass away and he was like the guy who taught me everything I knew about recording. And we used to try and like sneak things into mixes that would make the other person call the guy up and go, how did you do that? What did you do? Or why did you do that? You know, like you used to, you try and get each other going with something.
Right.
And when he passed away, I really thought about it. I was like, I'm making things, but I'm not really saying anything. And I felt like with music, I generally had somewhat of a voice. And it's like, you know, here I am. I'm sitting in a cubicle and not really making anything real, you know? And I thought, screw that. I got to make something that's mine. And I thought, all right, I want to make an instrument that Joe would look at me and say, why did you do that? You know, like what is wrong with you? And I thought, archtop baritone ukulele. Because there's no reason for it whatsoever. And it's you search out archtop baritone ukulele and there's like four. There's just,
I hear there's five now.
Yeah, I know. And they're out there. People make them, but it never seems to be a thing. And like, I even found a thread one time in some forum where people are saying, should it be this? Should be, and everybody says, there's no known thing out there to chase. It's either freeing or horrible. You know, it's where it's like you can make it whatever you want because there's no archtop baritone ukulele to hold up and say, this is one that works. And so I right off the bat, I knew that the first one was going to be junk. And so I made it with wood I had lying around. And this is, but these were all techniques I had never used before. I had steam bent chair parts, but I had never really bent anything, you know. I had never hot pipe bent anything. Everything in front of me was uncharted territory. But for some reason, I was stupid enough for just long enough to say, I can take this bit by bit and do this. And there's no plan to follow. There's no, you know, you kind of have to figure it out as you go. So that's fine. You can't really ruin it because there's nothing to ruin. There's no goal other than getting to the end of this thing.
Can I ask you, Ben, how long does a project like that take you?
That one, I think I started in April and I finished it in, I finished it in 4 or 5 months. And honestly, I've had tables take longer than that. But there was something that was inspired about it, and I just felt like, no, this is as much of a calling as I've experienced. I hate to be so grandiose about it, but it just felt right. It was like, no, this is my voice, and this is what I do with work with woodworking now, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. In fact, I was just going to mention, I thought about you a couple of days ago. I was, I forgot what I was watching on TV, but some wealth management company came on, and it was about this guy who builds ukuleles and wants to hand the business down to his son. I went, ooh, that could be Ben.
Well, and it just... It's funny because like now I am starting to think, hey, could I make these for sale at one point? Right. And, that is an eventual goal, but I just want to make an instrument that I'm truly, truly, truly proud of. Mm-hmm. And number two, I am stupid proud of, but it could be better, you know? Mm-hmm. It sounds good. It plays good. It's got a thing. But there are things that could be better about it. And number one is falling apart. It's literally pulling apart. The seams are just yanking itself apart, and that's fine. It served its purpose. It was the prototype of the prototype of the prototype. Much the way you think about your shop, Diami, which I think is a beautiful thing. Where it's like it's never done. It's always next to done. It's the one next to done. It's the penultimate. You know, there's something really freeing in that aspect. Where it's like, no, this one's not perfect, and the next one will be a little closer to perfect, but it won't be perfect either. But that's what I'm doing. It's for the first time as a woodworker, I feel like. No, this is what I'm meant to be doing. I'm not chasing somebody else's thing, you know. So
well, you know, you obviously have the woodworking side down. I mean, you know what you're doing, you know, and each one will get a little bit better as you figure out joints and different methods. But you're kind of comfortable with that background. But I imagine your background as being an audio engineer is also interesting because you can really evaluate probably fairly quickly whether what you're making is going to sound good or not.
No, I have no frame of reference in that regard.
Really?
Not until I string it up. It's I am flying blind. So
really? Interesting.
Yeah. Because, and especially, so if you're building an acoustic guitar, a flat top acoustic guitar, an X-Brace Martin style acoustic guitar, there are known variables. You can say, okay, if I move this brace this way, it's probably going to do this. And if I thin this piece this much, it's probably going to do that because there's a history laid out before me, you know, so there's a history to follow. There's a record. With this stupid archtop baritone ukulele, I've never seen one. I've never heard one. So the first time I heard one was the first one I strung up, and I strung it up, and part of you is waiting for it to explode, and the rest of you is waiting for the sound. And I plucked the string, and I immediately said, "Oh, okay, that's what it's going to be." And said, "All right, that's fine, you know." And I walked and it was one of those nights where, like, you know, everything just flowed. I thought I was not going to get as far as I did. I walked in the house afterwards and I said to my wife, "Ukulele sounds like shit."
Yeah.
and I'm sorry if you have to bleep that.
No, you're fine.
I'm too lazy to do that. I'll only bleep out Kyle's comments about Instagram.
Okay. But it's, and she's like, "I'm so sorry." I'm like, "It's okay. The next one will sound better, you know?" And so I don't know what it's going to be until right now between one and two, I made sure to only change things I needed to change to prove points to myself. I'm trying to do that scientific method, blah, blah, blah. The braces are in the same spot. The thickness of the back is the same. The thickness of the sides is the same. The main change is the wood I used. The F holes are a little bit different. Now number three will be identical to number two, but with an oval hole. It won't be an F hole uke. It'll be oval. Okay. So that will be the test there.
I understand the shape. Really, their impact on the instrument is lost on me. But let me ask a question. You mentioned before you'd never heard one till you played yours. So yeah. I'm assuming you haven't held one prior to yours either, or else you would have played it and heard it. So
I've never held one. I've never, honestly, a baritone archtopu, I've never seen one.
How do you know how to make one?
I don't. Well, okay, so...
Yeah, he's inventing the process.
No, so I did buy a set of plans for a regular baritone ukulele.
Okay.
So that has been somewhat of a basis, and then sometimes...
It's a starting off point, at least.
Yeah, or like I'll grab... I have two flat-top baritone ukuleles, and I'll grab one of those and measure something on it. And then just to make it like really weird, I changed the scale length, which is how long the fretboard is. Mm-hmm. And I just decided, I don't know, everybody else's are 17. This one's going to be 18. I don't know why. And so now I feel like I'm stuck with that 18-inch scale length. And I feel, you know, so, but that's why I say like that first build was, I'm not joking. I got done with that build and I was like walking around like I could do anything. I could do anything. I just made a ukulele with no guidance and it plays. It plays in tune. It doesn't sound great, but everything else was right about it. And it was like you throw anything at me in a wood shop, I'd be like, yeah, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a part of that is my job and hanging out with these monsters of the craft who can do anything. And maybe some of that has been assimilated and I've acquired some of their strut, mm-hmm. but I really do have this belief that I wish I could pass along to everyone of like, no, break it down into manageable pieces, go step by step. And there's no reason why you can't build anything you want to build.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because I am proof positive. Nobody would have ever looked at me beforehand, for better or worse, nobody would have ever looked at me and said, oh, there's this phenomenal woodworker who could do anything he wants to do or whatever. And now I feel like, no, screw you. If you don't believe that, you're wrong, because I can do anything I want to do. There's a strut that's come from it just because I figured it out.
Well, that was, I don't know when this was recorded, before, probably after the ukulele, but I watched your shop tour with Michael Fortune. And that's one thing that struck me was, well, maybe you had the strut before, because the one thing that struck me about that video is, well, look how calm and he's just leaning over, slumped on the table saw. He's just leaning over here. And it's like, this is Michael, does he call him Mike? Maybe he even calls him Mikey. I don't know. But you should just seem totally at ease and comfortable.
Well, keep in mind, too, that was day two of a tour.
Okay.
So, a lot of the times when we do this.
They were still drunk from the previous night.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, it wasn't like, Estrada was hungover. Yeah.
I didn't know any better. But going into like Tim Rousseau doing a shop tour, when I'm on camera, I was already there a week. You know, we've already like we know everything we need to know about each other. There's a comfort level already there. But I don't know. I have been able to always pull off that thing if I need to, but there was just something about that first project that either that ukulele that I swear you got done with it. And I was just like, man, if somebody, you know, before I started that, if somebody just told me I had to build, you know, a Federal period highboy with all sorts of inlay and everything, I would say there's no way I could do that. And after that project, I'd be like, yeah, I could do that. Mm-hmm. It might take me a long time and I'm going to screw a lot of stuff up and I'm going to be really frustrated, but I'm going to get it done in the end, because break it down into manageable sections. And there's not a woodworker out there who can't make any project they don't want that they want to make.
Right. Yeah. I completely believe that. I mean, I'm in chair making is in that realm for me. Instrument making also is. But yeah, like I've never done it. I really don't probably have a really good grasp on how to do it, but I'm sure once I did it, then I'd be like, nothing, got this. You know, like I could totally do that again.
Chairs were the same thing, where that was like a mountain that you couldn't climb until you climb it, you know?
Yeah. And then it gets pretty, I don't want to say easy, but it's always challenging, but you understand the process and what goes into it. But I imagine at some point, you know, that's mainly all I make is chairs. And I really like the aspect of once you make something, you can sit in it. And I'm mm-hmm. sure once you make something, you can play it. You can make music with it. So it's kind of an interesting dichotomy instead of just making like a cabinet not that there's anything wrong with that, but hold on. You know, it just kind of sits there.
I think there's something more personal about a chair mm-hmm. and an instrument, but fundamentally
a chair holds you. A chair, like you are putting faith in the chair.
Mm.
You know, like, because we've all sat. Now I'm a little bit bigger than you guys, but sometimes you sit in a chair and you don't have a whole lot of faith in that chair, you know. And so you are trusting of the chair and the maker of the chair. You don't have to submit to a table.
No,
the way you do a chair.
True. See, I don't know. Maybe. There's the personality and personalness of the chair and the ukulele. They're both more intimate than a table or a dresser. Mm-hmm. But on the same line, I think what the vast majority of us have in common as woodworkers, and there are some who are purely artists and making things for art's sake. And we all, some degree of what we make is for art's sake, but we also fall on the realm of function, and really mm-hmm. all of our work is on a spectrum between the two, and you try to balance it to your satisfaction. But what makes woodworking such a phenomenal pursuit is that at the end of the day, we make functional items, whether they be just a little functional or as important and intimate as an instrument or a chair. There's still function there. It's not just mm-hmm. a thing. It's not just something to look at or art or I don't know what else you'd call something that has no function. Mm-hmm. But that's the point. You're at the pinnacle of that in terms of mm-hmm. its functionality. But at the same time,
there's so much risk to that functionality. So like I always joke that, you know, with a there is a middle point with the chair, but like with a table, you know, you're going to be able to put your coffee cup down on that table and the coffee cup is not going to float away.
Well, maybe,
or, you know, but like it's that table will serve its function. But so the design is so important, to reach that next level.
See,
a chair. There is, like I said, that trust. You don't want it to creak. You don't want it to, whatever. And then you are sitting yourself on that. So that's the next level. And then, the stupid ukulele thing or a guitar or whatever, it might not serve its function at the end of the day. You know, like it's like you pluck that first note and you go, oh, crap, you know, and it's not an enjoyable instrument to listen to. It can look great, but it's art and you didn't set out to make art.
I think the function is there's an amplitude to it that varies on the effort that you put in. But you can make a chair that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, mm-hmm. I think that's analogous to an instrument that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I've burned a couple that are uncomfortable.
That's really, that's very true. You burned? Wow, yeah.
Yeah, they were. Hey, I was experimenting around. I've also scavenged some, you know, saying, okay, this one's not comfortable or something's wrong with that, but I can cut off the legs and return them for something else.
Yeah.
So I've done that a couple of times. It's just part of the process.
An uncomfortable chair is a ukulele that sounds bad. So what's the table version?
I'm going to say
the glass falls off of.
There's that. It's the table that rocks a little bit. It's the table that.
That's a good point.
The finish, you know, it's a dining room table, and you need to refinish it after 3 months. Mm-hmm. It's all on a scale, and certainly I think the refinishing is not as big a deal as the chair that's uncomfortable. It's easier to fix and repair, but ultimately the table has a certain function and it's failing that function. The chair and the instrument, mm-hmm. they have functions, they're failing the function.
Yes, I'm
all the same.
Currently at a table that I made for my kids when they were young as a quote unquote train table. It's a big 5x whatever table, right? But also in my view is a workout bench with a piece of stereo equipment on it. So a table's function is just to hold shit. in general, it doesn't. But the aesthetic then is beyond that, and what it makes it a better table, that it holds stuff eloquently.
But also, was that train table's function to make you a better woodworker?
Oh yeah. Oh for sure. For sure.
So, some of the crappiest looking stuff I have will always hold a place in my heart because that was its function, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I learned a lot making this thing. It was the first time that I did a full rabbit around a frame to hold a piece of plywood. And it's such a weird thing and such a large scale. Mm-hmm. But it was... Oh shit! How do I do this right? And it was legitimately at that point. I had trimmed houses, I had built houses, I had done a lot of work, but I'd never done the work to that particular detail, and I learned a ton, making it happen. And it's held the test of time. My kids are in high school,
and they still play with the train table all the time.
No hell no no no. Now it's on my recording studio, but which means I sit at a very low table. My real question is, if the description of a man or woman, whoever, makes a ukulele, are they a luthier or is there a different term for that?
Okay, so this is on the live stream. Somebody was arguing today. Somebody was arguing with me because I would not consider myself a luthier.
So what's the definition of a luthier?
Is it somebody who makes stringed instruments?
Stringed instruments. It's not guitar, violin, whatever.
There are violin luthiers. There are guitar luthiers.
They don't like each other.
Luthier, because that just rolls off the tongue.
And I think there are some schools for that too. You can go to school to become a luthierer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole thing, any other woodworking degree at, North Bennett Street or whatnot.
Yeah. It's the interesting thing to me is there's luthery podcasts I listen to and listening to to me, there's something beautiful about listening to violin luthiers talk because nobody's trying to invent the next. Well, there are people, but very few violin luthiers are trying to invent the next violin. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to perfect the violin that exists. Mm-hmm. All violins look the same to the layperson, but they all look the same. And they're all trying to just make it a little bit better, It's this weird world. But then as a woodworker, I listen to them and sometimes I go oh, you don't know how to sharpen. or whatever. So I live in these weird worlds where I love to listen to luthery, but I feel I'll always be a woodworker. I don't know why. There's and Barry at work and I, we discuss often when do you feel like you're a woodworker? Well, when you're sitting at the table with Mike Pekovich, you feel less of a woodworker than you do most of the time. Mm-hmm. He doesn't make you feel that way, but you just compare your work to his and you come up wanting,
Right.
Or when you're on a shoot with Garrett Hack, you don't feel like a real woodworker right then. You feel like you hang out with woodworkers. I feel like a woodworker now, but I don't think I'll ever feel like a luthier.
It's interesting.
Well, I noticed, and I don't know if this comes, but Frank Straza is getting into doing more Luthry, it seems like.
Yeah. He the guy that he made one of the benches, that bench with the marquetry inlay of the violin maker thing. Actually, he's one of the hosts of this podcast that I listen to. And they're from a different planet. I swear to God. But Frank fits that perfect spot where it's like, you know, he listens to classical music and he goes to see orchestras and he plays cello and builds cello risers. Like, who knew that was a thing before Frank Straza on Instagram?
I never did. Yeah.
come on. But I would love to have this conversation with him sometime, because I think he definitely knows more about Luthery than I do, and he knows more about that world than I do. I just know about it through podcasts, which is not a way of learning.
They're so fake.
Oh, shots fired.
No, I meant podcasts. That was not a shot at Luthery podcast.
Okay.
Well,
being self-deprecating there.
Yeah. Well, Ben, I think we need know what you need to do for your next live stream. You know, jam out a little bit on the. Yeah. Oh, sure. And, you know, followed up with a little guest interview of Frank.
That would be cool. I would jam with Frank.
Yeah.
I don't like jamming, but I would jam with Frank.
Yeah, he is such a super nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, before we finish up the episode, one thing I do want to talk about is fine woodworking, since you're here. So, tell us a little bit about what a typical day was like for you. And I guess that's all changed now, but hopefully it'll come back somewhat. But I mean, you know, I think everyone hears you on the podcast and stuff, but a lot of people don't know, hey, what does Ben actually do when he's not on the podcast?
It's funny. So the typical day is a blur normally. Mm-hmm. I have a little bit of a system. I sit down, I read emails, and then I read comments. And depending how the first one goes, I might come back to comments later, or I might try and do something else before I finish comments. But it's like I read website comments and forum comments, and then YouTube comments. And then Facebook comments. And, so a surprising amount of my time goes towards website management. So
that doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, yeah, for you. But I think a lot of people think, working at Fine Woodworking, it's this, awesome, artsy fartsy, sexy job. And a lot of times there's somebody email customer service about a PDF that's not functioning right and on a page from 2007. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not arguing that everything on the website shouldn't work properly, but it's like, whoa, you really went digging, trying to track down the PDF, and sometimes it's on two websites ago, and trying to track down the files from them. But, it just... your day can spiral really out of control when 2007 rears its head. So I do a lot of that. We generally try and post one post, article, whatever, video to the website, at least one every weekday. Mm-hmm. So each one of those probably takes me about at least an hour to get up, because I got to check tagging. I got to check all the taxonomy stuff. Is it categorized right? Read through it, double check all the technical stuff, make sure all the links work, add links in, trying to keep people on the web page. And, there's all sorts of little things that go into making there's this. We're fine woodworking. It's got to be as good as you can possibly make it. And even if that's a blog post, a 400-word blog post, it's got to be as good as you can make it, because that's like, you see that logo and you just go, oh, amp it up, man. Amp it up. So there's a lot of that. And then There's the podcast, which is the fun part that everyone knows about. And some days I'm editing video a lot. So, you know, we go out and we do, especially most of my video editing is the video workshops now, which I enjoy editing those. So, you know, Jeff and I shoot all those. I do a first pass of editing, kind of get the content locked in, and then Jeff does, then I hand it off to him and he does like the polish and make everything small thing.
Well, y'all do a great job. I like you, Ben, but
he's a lot more polished than you are.
No, but y'all do a great job with the video workshops. In fact, I've been a member since who knows when, but you can really tell the difference from where they started to where they are now.
They took a turn.
I mean, not saying that the early ones were bad. It's just
different.
It's different,
And like, as a woodworker, I grew up watching, oh man, Garrett Hack with that little tool cabinet thing. There's that one video where he closes the door and it gets that perfect cushion of air thing going on. And he just has that grin on his face. And I made my wife watch that 5 times in a row when, you know, she came home from work. I was like, you guys see this guy. There's so many great videos there, but they were limited to the time of a DVD.
Yep.
And
that's a good point. Yeah.
We don't have that going on anymore. And then if I'm honest too, Matt Wada came in and just ruined everything. That man, we did that North Bennett Street tool chest with him and he can't stop teaching. He cannot stop giving you pearls of wisdom. And so when you're cutting dovetails, he's chopping out dovetail waste. It takes 45 minutes on a big chest like that. And normally we would have taken that 45 minutes and made it 37 seconds.
Right.
But if Matt Wada is sitting there telling you all of this wonderful teachable, giving you these teachable moments every 37 seconds, what are you going to leave on the floor, the cutting room floor? Mm-hmm. And I remember Jeff looking at me, go, what do I cut? And we just said, we leave it all. It's 45 minutes now. This episode is 45 minutes now.
And it's just him chopping waste talking.
It's just him chopping waste talking. And he's telling you about this thing. He's telling you, and he's one of those guys who, oh my goodness, the knowledge that man has is insane. And he's such a passionate teacher. He's so passionate about teaching woodworking. And it's like, you can't stop it. Just leave it. You know, sometimes editing is leaving things alone. Mm-hmm. And so that came out and I remember like going, oh no, what is going to happen? Like this is not what they sent me up there to do. And I remember there were some side eyes I got when people saw like this first episode is like half an hour long. What are you doing? And then I think in response to YouTube, where everybody is used to, it's like, man, if you want to go get like bing, bang, boom, here's the highlights. You can get those all day long on YouTube. And it's like, so no, we slow it down and give you the whole thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And people really enjoy it. So, but yeah, I blame Matt Wada. I blame Jeff for having the guts to not edit it. And I blame the lack of not having to hit a 2-hour time limit.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. But yeah, y'all definitely do a great job with that. But, and yeah, anybody that's not a member, highly encouraged, because even though he complains about it, you can go back to 2007, 1984, you know, however far back you want to go.
bstrano@taunton.com just comes straight to me when something doesn't work. So I don't have to involve other people as well. So
that's right. Yeah. So, yes. I think I got an article. I was building some stools and I got an article. I forgot who wrote it, but it was some neat looking stools, but it was like from, I want to say 82 or something like that. No, all the pictures were black and white.
I always think of Gary Rogowski's stool.
No, it wasn't Gary's. It was somebody else. I'm blanking on
findwoodworking.com/magazine-index, page 3, 1982. Tayfrid doing a folding stool with tray, 3-legged stool by David W. Scott in issue number 36.
That's probably it.
Let's click on that. Oh, yeah, really round thing, three legs, crossing. Yeah, I'll post a link to this. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So so just like that, you can find anything you need at findwoodworking.com. So anyway, and how much is, why don't we just do a plug? How much is subscription?
I think it's $8 a month or $100 a year.
That's the unlimited, which is really what everybody wants.
Yeah, that's unlimited. So that's the magazine and full access to the website.
Now, I know they were doing a promotion when they first came out with the unlimited, which is what, a year or two ago. You were hand delivering every hard copy, but that's not, they're not doing that anymore, right? Because you're too busy making ukuleles.
Yeah. I'm not hand delivering them anymore. And we don't have two covers anymore.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that went on for longer than it should have, didn't it?
Depends who you ask.
Okay, as a consumer of the magazine,
longer than I thought it was.
It was pretty cool, but I know a little bit about the business of magazines, and it made no sense.
Listen, our job is not to always make sense.
You know what? Fair enough. I can respect that.
We're making content here.
Yeah. What Pekovich wants, Pekovich gets.
Yeah. Oh, wow. He seems so nice and patient most of the time.
He's great. But if he's like, no, I think we should do two covers, it's, all right, let's try. It was cool. It was a cool little period.
Yeah. Well, with that, let's get on to our fortnightly beer choices. So with my self-quarantine, I'm still just drinking water.
Does the quarantine require you to be dry, or is it that you just can't go out and get any?
Well, no, I figured, you know, if there's a chance I might get something, I might as well make sure my immune system's at its peak operating efficiency.
Absolutely. No, yeah. I don't mean to throw... to not give that the weight it deserves, because anyone with risk of this certainly should be healthy.
Yeah, they haven't shut down the liquor stores yet, so you know we're in real trouble when that happens. So
well, you're in Texas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Isn't that in the state constitution? They can't shut them down?
I don't know. We got weird liquor laws. I mean, we don't have the state-run places, but, I mean, you can't buy on Sunday. They have to – they stop selling – this is hard liquor. They stop selling at 9 o'clock at night.
I don't think those blue laws are as weird as you think.
And you can't find hard liquor in, like, your drugstore or grocery store.
It's only beer and
wine. Okay.
It's similar here. My favorite was in Tennessee. On Sundays, you couldn't buy beer until 12 unless you were in the Titans Stadium.
they have similar laws here. Like on Sunday, you cannot buy beer till 12. You can get it served at a restaurant, like if you were going for brunch or something, one of your mimosas. The food has to be in front of you before they can serve it to you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, me and some friends of ours, we always hit an early morning. We used to go to one of those theaters that serves food and stuff. And we'd always hit Sunday early morning, like the 11 o'clock showing. And so if you ordered something like a mimosa or a Bloody Mary, they would come out with this teeny tiny bowl of popcorn to sit in front of you. So
that's great.
But anyway, but Sean, so what are you drinking?
So it's still winter. Just in case you haven't paid attention to the seasons, we haven't quite switched out of winter yet. So I've got Flying Dog's Canine Winter Warmer, which, yes, my wife found on sale at the liquor store, but it's not bad. It's a nice, you know, kind of heavier. It's, I think it's 7-something%.
Are you warm?
I am. This is the second one I had tonight. It's very nice. And so it's done its job.
There you go.
Excellent. Diami, how about you?
I have some Omegang Neon Rainbows IPA. It should be a plural. There are multiple rainbows. It's Neon Rainbows IPA.
All right.
Omegang is a brewery upstate. It's in Cooperstown, which is where the Baseball Hall of Fame is. I've been inside the brewery. I've never been inside the Hall of Fame. And Omegang does Belgians, and they do lots of quads.
Yeah, they do heavy stuff.
Yeah, they do heavy stuff. And they do the heavy stuff quite well, but it's usually stuff that's a little too heavy for me.
Okay.
Having been to the brewery, I was pleasantly surprised by some of the lighter ales and IPAs they had. So when I saw this and the pretty checkered rainbow labeling on the can, how could I have said no to it? I should have. It's okay. It's not worth buying, but it's not terrible. You know, it's better than things that come in clear bottles. But it's just an IPA. It's a little watery. It's a touch tinny. That's too strong a word. I was trying. Well, the whole time I've been drinking it, I've been trying to think of a word that's tinny, but not quite as strong as that. And I don't know how to do it. It's quasi tinny. But it's just
aluminum-y.
Yeah, maybe it's aluminum-y. it's just okay. It's criticism by faint praise. Like, there's nothing wonderful about it. It's kind of weak. It's not a successful IPA.
If any of you aren't well versed in Long Island, not terrible is actually a compliment.
Not successful, on the other hand.
You know what this is? This is the poor sounding ukulele of upstate New York IPAs. That's what this is.
There it is.
It's playable. Yeah. Just not enjoyable. Just
exactly.
Not enjoyable. Right. Yeah. Well, with that, Ben, so what are you drinking?
I'm drinking water.
All right.
I looked. We don't drink a lot. I hardly ever drink these days. And I even looked, I was like, oh, doing the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. Let's go see if we have a beer in the fridge. And we didn't have anything. But if I was drinking a beer and I could have any beer, I was thinking about this, I would have a Yazoo Dos Perros right now. Yazoo is a Nashville beer.
Okay.
And it's their, and I'm really bad at describing beer flavors and everything. So I'm actually looking at the website right now thinking like, what is, like, are they going to ask me, is it an IPA? Is it this? And it doesn't say. It's a beer. It's a Mexican style beer. That's I don't know. It's a tasty beer. And
what color is it?
It's dark. It's a dark, tasty beer.
Okay.
That I really miss. Anyone in Nashville right now, go have a Dos Perros for me. So
I'm trying to think if I had that one. I was in Nashville. It's been a couple of years, but I don't honestly know.
There's so many breweries there now. When I was there, the majority of the time, there was only one local brewery. And you walk into a bar and you go, what Yazoo do you have? And whatever they said, that's what you were drinking. And
okay.
You know, every bar had two or three Yazoos on tap, and now it's just gotten out of hand. And I remember just being really pissed, being like, I walked into a bar, what Yazoo do you have? And they said, oh, we don't have any. I'd be like, what? I stormed out of there, you know?
I can't believe it.
City's gone to hell.
That's right.
But, yeah. So.
Well, fantastic. Well, Ben, where can folks find you on the interwebs? Or
I'm really hard to find.
Yes, you are. I'm
Ben Strano on Instagram. And if you're not following Fine Woodworking Magazine, there's 280,000 people who say you should. So Fine Woodworking Magazine is the one I'd prefer you follow because I'm paying bills.
That's very generous of you, Ben. And Fine Woodworking Magazine puts out phenomenal content. But really, get off your butt and follow both of them.
Well, thank you.
That's right. That's right. And don't you also manage the Shop Talk Live?
Now, what is that? We've mentioned it a couple times. I still don't really understand. What is Shop Talk Live?
We're a podcast. It's a podcast, and we'll show you guys how to do it sometime.
Oh, man.
That's right. Shots fired.
That's our podcast. It's three guys sitting around talking about woodworking. Where else can you get that?
I'm not a permanent host, but I was on Shop Talk Live well before you.
You were. I remember that episode. Didn't a microphone stand that Ed made get glued to a table?
Probably. And that was back in the day of having to drive to Connecticut to be on the show.
Yeah. And now with the virus, we'll probably be having guests on a lot more.
Yeah, that's right. Well, y'all are getting up there because y'all are episode 200 or something.
I don't know when you guys flew past us. When you sent me this email, it was like 289. It was like, what? Yeah, so we're at 211 just posted.
Well, it all goes back to the fact that our podcast is about 2 weeks older.
Is it really?
It really is.
Is that all?
I always thought it's not, like,
maybe it's a month. It's not more than that. It's right about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And but you don't go weekly, so I don't know.
Generally, it is.
Yeah, yeah. But there were some periods.
There have been periods when it was like 6 weeks. But for the last, I'm going to say 4-ish years, and I might be wrong in that, but it's been a while that we've been pretty consistently weekly.
And Sean.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Sean.
It is Sean. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Sean.
I'm glad I did about something. Right. It's probably about when Sean came on, it got real consistent. Yeah.
And now since Kyle, so Kyle's kind of picked up.
Yeah. Kyle is the one carrying the weight right now. It's not me.
Oh, 100%.
Well, you know, I'm semi-retired.
Mm-hmm. But you're young.
But I'm young. Exactly. Well, before we talk about my pending Social Security check, Diami, where can folks find you?
Well, I can be found at penultimatewoodshop.com. I'm on the Twitter at Diami Plotke. I'm on some Instagram thing. I'm just calling people out and teasing them on Instagram. You know, this weekend, if you should find yourself isolated in your house, come on by my driveway and I'll be sanding blue epoxy, which I'm sure is a good way to fight the virus.
Yeah, and your entertainment center is longer than 6 feet, so you can maintain that social distance.
That's right. You can sand one side and I'll sand the other.
You got three people on that thing and not catch anything.
There it is.
So, Sean, what about you?
While I'm not in Long Island to watch Diami sand, I'm on most social medias at SeanW78, Instagram, Untapped, all those things. Kyle, how about you?
Well, you can always find me at Barton.Kyle on Instagram. The only beep.
social media that matters. And that just about wraps up this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. Then you'll never miss any of our new exciting episodes. While you're there, leave us a review.
Thank you.
Reviews really do help.
What's that?
They do.
Reviews really do help people.
Yes.
I'll be honest. I have not checked our reviews in about 7 years.
You don't check them every morning?
I never check them. I don't have an iTunes account. I literally reviews? Can't check them if I want to.
Okay.
I'm going to check them right now. Go on.
Thank you, Sean. Because ultimately, Ben, what it comes down to is the success of this podcast has no bearing on my job performance.
Yeah. If we check the reviews, we might not do the podcast.
I can tell you that's true.
So with that, thank you for listening. Go grab your friend's phone and subscribe, because that's really the best way. All this review stuff is nonsense. Just tell your friend to listen. And go into your shop and spend a couple months making something that you're passionate about, and then be disappointed by his performance and make another one, because that's how we get better and grow as artists. So get out there and make something.